This is Scott Becker with Becker's Healthcare. This is a special podcast, 20 Thoughts on the Impact of the Election on Healthcare. We're going to talk through 15 to 20 points here. We'll start with some level setting on sort of what things look like today. You know, first go through the election results. There's election results, everybody will be familiar with this. Almost certainly President Biden is the winner. We're talking now, this has been recorded early December 2020. The Senate is split at 50 to 48. Republicans hold 50, Democrats hold 48. Two outstanding seats in Georgia. The special election may or may not have a big impact on really what could be done in terms of healthcare and changes and so forth. The House sits at about 222 for the Democrats, 208 for the Republicans. About five or so seats outstanding, and those numbers are estimates, but about where they're at. That gives the Democrats a slim majority in the House. And then in the governorship side, the Republicans hold 27 governorships, the Democrats hold 23. And this amount of balance leads to some softening of predictions on what can happen and the impact of the election on healthcare. The second point I'll make today is to sort of work through where current coverage is at. And this is very helpful for understanding when people talk about different options, what they might mean in terms of the current coverage and what it really sits at today. So current coverage, about 49.2% people have coverage through employers. About 5% or so people have through direct purchase of insurance. Third, and a big, big part of the coverage universe is Medicaid. Almost 20% of people get their insurance through Medicaid. Fourth is Medicare. And Medicare, interesting to note, is a much smaller percentage in total numbers than Medicaid and employer. About 14% of people get their coverage through Medicare. The military is 1% to 2%, and then the uninsured is still 9.2%. So the uninsured. A couple of points on the uninsured. The uninsured equals about 29 to 30 million people. That and the Medicaid number will likely creep up this year due to the pandemic and a number of challenges that people are having economics with their jobs. Fourth point, just sort of walking through this in points of 20 points, Medicare increases the amount of people covered by Medicare about 2 million people a year. That's for all practical purposes the number of people that turn 65 each year. And this is an important number to understand as people talk about expanding Medicare to lower the age for eligibility or other types of things that have been talked about on the Democratic platform. So if you move the Democratic platform, talked about making Medicare eligible at 60, which a lot of people that are less than 65 would like, this adds at least 2 million people a year immediately, too many people per age to Medicare. So if you went from 65 to 60, it probably adds 10 to 15 million people to Medicare enrollment. The fifth point I'll make today, Medicaid has close to 64 million people on it, which is a much larger number than people on Medicare. And this has grown 10 to 12 million people since the ACA was passed and Medicaid expansion. Medicaid is also seeing increases in the people on Medicaid during the pandemic. So expanded Medicaid has been a big part of where some of the amount of people that were uninsured went to past 2010. The sixth point we'll make today, and this will bring us all to what will likely happen pissed through this election, but it's important to level set to understand where we're at today, is the ACA reduced the uninsured by about 15 to 20 million people, mostly through Medicaid expansion. So if at one point you had 44 to 50 million people that were uninsured, today you have about 20 to 30 million people that are uninsured, and a lot of that reduction came from the ACA and Medicaid expansion. Another way of putting this, our seventh point, uninsured were around 18% pre the ACA. Now they're about 9 to 10 or 11%, the uninsured. Medicaid, another point, eight. In 2010, there were 51 million people on Medicaid. Today there's 64 to 65 million people on that. In 2010, there were 34 million people on Medicare. Today, just through the gradual aging of the population, there's 45 million people on Medicare, and another 1 to 2 million people move onto Medicare per year. the uninsured has decreased, at least from one estimate, 46 million to 29 million today. Now, to talk about different policies, things that we'll see under a Biden administration with a relatively divided Congress, or balanced Congress, however you want to look at it. First, talk about COVID-19. You may see a national mask mandate. You are unlikely to see national lockdowns. You will see, and this would have probably been true under Trump or Biden, the expediting of vaccines. It is thought that Pfizer's applied for an EUA with the FDA. Moderna has done the same thing. Pfizer is expected to be approved a little bit after December 10th. Moderna a little after December 18th. And the idea is between the two of them, there's the ability to vaccinate about 20 million people this December, and then that will increase over time and be more generally available by the spring. The vaccines will probably start with healthcare workers, then those that are essential workers, then those with other conditions, and then the elderly, and then the rest of the people. I don't know that there will be a vast difference ultimately in policy under either administration. With the Biden administration or Trump administration, the next big step is vaccines. And in terms of national lockdowns, although there's some people in the Biden administration talk about that more than they would in the Trump administration, we think that by the time that Biden comes to power, late January, you'll start to see the vaccines being distributed in a significant amount and probably avoid a national lockdown of commerce and business. The fourth issue, and the Biden administration will probably be more prone to this, is trying to give more stimulus to states, municipalities, hospitals, health systems, individuals, and businesses than the Trump administration would have been. But either way, you probably will have a serious amount of federal help to states and hospitals and health systems, but you'll have some check on how much help there will be. In terms of the 10th point in this discussion, the Supreme Court recently heard in the Affordable Care Act case, we believe that based on the discussion in that case from the judges, particularly considered the conservative judges, there's very little likely that that case will lead to overturning the entire ACA. That we just think that's extremely unlikely. If it's overturned, we'll need to fix ASAP as soon as possible some of the issues related to Medicaid subsidies and expansion and the rules related to pre-existing conditions. We'll talk about that in a moment. The 11th point I'll make is that Americans, whether Republican or Democrat, overwhelmingly support the idea that you get coverage with pre-existing conditions. This polls at 80% plus. Americans also are very positive towards what's called a public option. And when you think about this, there's the 50% or so of people that get their insurance through employers. There's the 5% of people or so that get their coverage directly by purchasing it through insurance companies. A public option would give employers a much greater amount of flexibility that people buy their coverage through a public option. And then for those that don't have an employer, the public option would be a godsend. People would very much like to have the option of buying their coverage through Medicare versus the insurance firms. The 12th point we'll make today is on Medicare for All. When you look at the fact that only 14% of Americans are on Medicare today, and that 50% are on employer coverage, and another 18 to 20% are on Medicaid, one sort of has a better understanding of the magnitude of moving towards Medicare for All. Medicare for All might in the long term be a solution towards universal national coverage, and it might in the long term be the way that the nation will go. But at this point, probably a gradual step towards that would be more Medicaid expansion in a public option. Medicare for All would be a giant change, really, and it may be too rapid to do something like that without understanding fully the consequences of it. And it's easier to understand that when you see that only 14% of people in our country are currently on Medicare. Generally, in terms of Medicare for All, hospitals and health systems are big fans of universal coverage, but very concerned about Medicare or Medicaid for All based just on reimbursement rates that hospitals and systems get for Medicare and Medicaid. 13th point of today is President Biden has encouraged in his platform reducing the Medicare eligible age. Each year adds about 2 million people to Medicare. And again, this kind of incremental change versus moving towards Medicare for all, this kind of incremental change, the change of a public option, is probably far easier to pass and make work and have the country manage than is a drastic change. So there will be objection to reducing the Medicare eligible age, but it will be broadly popular with a lot of the American public. The national support from a Biden administration for Medicaid's critical, and it's a growing percentage of the population that's on Medicaid, and state budgets and more need support. And so shoring up providing support to Medicaid will probably become a core concept of the Biden administration. 14th, the Biden administration, the Democratic platform, has talked a lot about giving drug price negotiations to Medicare. This is something that, in many people's thoughts, is long overdue. We'll see if this evolves to happen or not. The 15th issue, you will see changes in CMS and FDA leadership as part of a new administration. This administration, from a CMS perspective, it's one of the places where hospital leadership applauds the Trump administration for taking away red tape through CMS and bureaucracy through CMS. Even though I would say generally hospital systems don't point to the Trump administration, they do point to that as a positive. We don't know what will happen in the new Biden administration with CMS or with FDA leadership, but either way, the biggest priority right now will be moving forward with vaccines and so forth. 16th point today, and a lot of this will be done through executive order. There will be efforts by an administrative, by a Biden presidency, to shore up the ACA and make it easier for people to directly purchase insurance through ACA types of plans and so forth. Now, the 17th point, which we've already talked about, is Medicare and Medicaid generally pay doctors and hospitals less than private insurance. Thus, even though the healthcare system world is largely quite positive towards universal coverage, they are concerned about higher population being on lower and lower reimbursement rates. 18th point, whether a Biden or Trump administration, you're seeing greater support for behavioral health efforts, and we'll probably continue to see that. 19th is under a Biden administration or a Trump administration, relatively tough on increased doctor and hospital payments, but there is a universal or pretty recognized need that there's a need to save health systems and support health systems to make sure there's enough beds, enough doctors, enough healthcare workers. Something that's not often talked about enough by either administration is not just coverage, but access. Ultimately, our country needs a lot more healthcare workers. And figuring out how we're going to get there is a great question, great challenge, not talked about enough. 20th issue we'll talk about briefly in terms of the election and the impact is telehealth. Obviously, there's been a lot of telehealth expansion by CMS through emergency orders and so forth. I think many people in the healthcare community assume that CMS will continue to reimburse for telehealth and that peers will continue to do the same. The Biden administration has not been that vocal about this, but people are hopeful that we'll continue to permit in great degree telehealth and reimbursement for telehealth. And some of the other initiatives taken up by Trump that would break down state lines over telehealth and prescribing and other kinds of issues. In any event, this is a quick sense of the impact on the election on healthcare. It'll be a fascinating couple of years. A lot will be consumed in the first year by just dealing with the COVID-19 response. And then you'll see, depending what happens in the 2022 election or if the Democrats can do something in 2021, some movement on some of these other priorities. You will see almost immediately some movement to shore up the ACA and trying to help Medicaid through different executive orders. Thank you very much for listening. Any questions, please contact Scott Becker at Becker's Healthcare or follow Becker's Healthcare. Thank you very much.